Welcome to the gardening program. We're still looking for a name for the program, of course. I'm your host, Brian Earle. I don't need a name, but the program itself does. And I hope that you will give your input. We've had listeners who have given us some names to look at, and we have them on our website at upr.org, as well as at our Facebook page, the Utah Public Radio Facebook page. And I was going to go over these titles so you can be thinking about them. We've had the Horseradish Whisperer. That's kind of a play on the title. It's a little bit of a tongue twister, so I'm not sure I would do that one, but we'll see what people like. The Plant Whisperer. Wait, wait, don't plant that. The Growing Season. Green Talkers. The Zesty Gardener. Get Growing. The Garden Patch. And then this one showed up yesterday. Weed 'em and reap. So I have in studio with me today, we're going to be talking about pruning, and Mike Coons, the USU Extension Forestry Specialist, is in studio. And so I don't, Mike, do any of those kind of?
Well, the whisper ones, I wonder, are you planning on whispering?
Yeah. I think it's just a takeoff on the horse whisperer.
Yeah, right.
It's like,
yeah.
Okay, well, we'll put it down. It was one of the more requested titles.
Yeah.
And then I really liked Weed 'em and Reap, but then I think, well, is it too gimmicky? Will it stand the test of time?
Yeah, it's a little boring, but actually the Garden Patch I kind of like. But
have you voted?
No, I haven't,
oh, okay.
Actually.
Okay.
But you're going to do some other segments as part of the show,
yeah,
too,
well,
right?
And that was the other thing I wanted to talk about was internally within the program, I wanted to do some things like, look at my pieces of paper here, which I printed out and didn't bring in with me, so I'll try to remember what I did. One of them was to take one of these titles that's out there for the name of the program, like Wait, Wait, Don't Plant That, mm-hmm. and use that as a title for a segment within the program. And have talk. Someone each week would talk about a different plant not to put in Utah. For mm-hmm. instance, blueberries would be at the top of my list. Something not to put in. And as far as a tree, what would be on the top of your list of not plant?
Russian olive.
Oh, and you can buy those?
You know, I don't know. Probably you can because they're not illegal anywhere but the Uinta Basin, and there they would be.
So the county has declared them a noxious weed there?
Yeah, right. So even if you have them, it's illegal not to remove them. The rest of the state, it's not a declared noxious weed, so I think anybody who wanted to could sell them. But Russian olive and tamarisk are the two really glaring examples of weed trees that have had serious negative effects on native landscapes, riparian landscapes along streams. And then there's one that some people like. I think people like it less and less. And it is a little bit of a weed. And in the northeastern U.S., it's a big-time weed, and that's Norway maple.
Really?
But I have seven of them in my yard, so I guess I can't complain too loudly.
And why is it considered a weed in the Northeast?
It just has really gotten out into the woodlands there. It's not native there, so a weed is a plant where you don't want it. And when it comes to plants introducing themselves into non-cultivated areas, into native forests, then you have the possibility of losing your significant parts of your native forest. I don't know any example where.
So is it taking over? Is it stronger than sugar maple, for instance? Or
you know, I don't travel in the Northeast very much, so I've only heard about this. But I've actually had people from the Northeast review materials we had out here and educational materials and comment on that they just can't believe that we would have Norway maple on a list of trees that are okay. They're really surprised because it is a noxious weed, I think, up into New England.
So is it just our drier climate that keeps them in check?
Maybe so. But anybody who's listening here who has a Norway maple has had Norway maples come up in their yard, I guarantee it. And so you see the possibilities. And it is in Logan Canyon, you know, within a few miles of the mouth, you start losing them, of the mouth of the canyon. But there are naturalized ones, meaning it's seeding in and growing on its own. I think around the Guinevere Malibu campground. And then I don't know about the Wasatch Front canyons. It'd be interesting if anybody knows of seeing Norway maples naturalized up those canyons.
Well, when you look at how many towns in the state have streets and streets of Norway maple.
Yeah. Well, and the bigger problem I have with Norway maple is familiarity breeds contempt. I know Norway maples well. And they tend to get girdling roots where roots cross over each other. And when the trunk grows out, it all meets and the tree starts to decline. I've got maybe four of my seven that have had serious girdling root problems. And I've done multiple root excavations on one of them trying to save it. It's just choking itself.
So it's, even though it's got plenty of room to grow, they just decide to grow around and around instead of out?
Yeah, and it's partly a function of planting them a little bit too deep. But some species, you could do that and you'd never get a girdling root. With Norway maple, if you plant it a little too deep, you're going to have girdling roots. And if you get girdling roots all the way around, the way this one tree of mine has, then at the time, the number of years it takes for the trunk to reach these roots that were growing sideways from the edge of the root ball, so maybe the base of the trunk getting to be 18 inches or 2 feet in diameter, when it reaches that size, then the roots are also growing in diameter, some of them, and it all coalesces and the roots choke off the trunk. And so you go in and you remove soil and you try to identify where the really critical roots are that are causing the most problem, and you cut them off. And the problem is I've got so many girdling roots on that one tree that I'm also removing a significant proportion of the tree's root system by doing that. Because if I cut a root, everything from there out is dead. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a declining tree that I need to repair, but I'm doing damage when I repair it, and I don't know if that tree will make it.
Well, now, you said you have seven in your yard?
Yeah, six parking strip and one in the front yard.
I suspect those were there before you bought
your home. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is it doesn't respond to pruning very well. You get a lot of dieback in the trunk and upper branches when you kind of open up the canopy and let more light in. I don't know why that is, but it's definitely true that you get that on Norway maples in general. We have a lot of Norway maples here on the USU campus, and I'm on the Arboretum Committee, and we're de-emphasizing that species over time.
Look at Old Main.
The quad.
And the quad. I mean, right. They surround the quad.
Yeah, and the plan is eventually to, not suddenly, but to eventually phase that species into growing something else. And there is the state champion Norway maple on the north side of the quad, the farthest tree west.
It's a state champion? It's the largest?
It's the biggest in the state, yeah, and we'll save it for sure as long as possible. But a lot of the others just are starting to break up, a lot of dieback in the canopies, you know, and you don't want that where you have a lot of people.
Well, okay, so here's a decision that's hard to make then. Some trees grow faster, others grow slower. The ones that don't tend to rot and tend to have good wood in them also take a long time to get established. So for the quad, how do you decide what you're going to put in there? And as you already mentioned, you're not going to take them all out at once.
Right. Yeah, and it's partly design and aesthetics and partly biology. And ideally, you'd have a native species there. Unfortunately, probably the best native species we have for planting in ornamental landscapes and getting big are conifers. You know, ponderosa pine can be a pretty good tree planted in the valleys. Gamble oaks do fine, but they don't really get big very often. White fir is a good species for the valleys for the most part.
So you looking to stay native, or are you thinking of
– Well, no. Well, so conifers really weren't going to fit the aesthetic there. And so we didn't really even end up discussing those. And there were no large full canopied trees that are native to plant there. I mean, you're going to put quaking aspen.
And those wouldn't probably do very well at this elevation anyway.
There is big tooth or canyon maple, Acer grande dentatum, that is a good species, but it doesn't get big. And so we ended up going away from native. Then we discussed one species or a multiple number of species. And because of the aesthetics and the somewhat formal look that was desired by many of the people on the committee, we ended up going with a single species with an arched canopy that closes over the sidewalk. And that was debated a lot.
I could imagine.
Like try to pick a few species and alternate them or something and large trees, but all that got large so they would somewhat have a common look.
So you're looking at anything taller than 25 feet or something?
Yeah,
or?
It needed to mature taller than that. And what we ended up with is a species that nearby in Logan Cemetery, there's the perfect look. On the east-west lanes through Logan Cemetery.
Is that London Plain?
London Plain.
Okay,
yeah.
I wondered.
Yeah, and it's not the perfect species. It's not a perfect species, but it's the only fast-growing tree that I regularly recommend because it's not weak-wooded and it's not decay-prone. And they get large, you know. And all you have to do is go down Highway 89 from Brigham City all the way to Salt Lake, probably into Utah County, and you can see occasionally these double rows of
– Brigham City's main
Brigham
street
City,
has,
right.
Has
but
a lot
Farmington.
Of Farmington.
That was a theme along Highway 89 at one time. And it's really awesome. I mean, you know, the London Plains in Brigham City – with that five-lane highway going through the middle of town, if you didn't have those London Plains, it just wouldn't be the same place.
Now, they also have another name, sycamore. Some people might know that.
Yeah, and I call them London Plane Tree. Well, Plane Tree, it's P-L-A-N-E, and the wood of sycamores used to be used for the bodies of – it's a hand woodworking tool, a plane that you remove wood with. It's a really tough wood with a lot of cross grain so it doesn't split and it's very stable. But American sycamore actually is more prone to a disease, a leaf disease that they get called anthracnose.
And that's in Salt Lake because there are
a lot of
those trees in Salt
Lake. Yeah. And London Plane Tree, especially Bloodgood, the one that we're Bloodgood is somebody's name, I think, is a cultivar name. And that's a hybrid between American sycamore and Oriental sycamore. So London Plain is just the name used for any hybrid between those, or at least many of the hybrids.
So it's not as prone to that disease.
Yeah. I mean, that was a thing we had to think about was anthracnose. It's not a fatal disease, and in trees that get it, it doesn't come every year. It's the worst when a spring is cool and wet and very extended. And there are treatments, but one treatment is just to wait, and the next year may be much better.
What about soil pH? How well does it do?
They're great.
Okay.
No problem. You know, think of those trees in the cemetery. You just don't see yellow leaves.
They don't tend to get any kind of chlorosis into them at all.
No, and they have beautiful bark. A lot of people Don't even think about bark when they're planting a tree, but there's a lot of trees with really beautiful bark. And you're living with the bark as much as you're living with the canopy, the leaves.
Well, and London Plains, at least the ones that I've seen, tend to – I think they would grow really well across the sidewalk, even better than the maples that are already there.
You mean reaching
across? Yeah, reaching across.
For sure. Yeah, they will, 'cause they can get typically, I think of a London Plane being as wide as it is tall, and they'll get easily 60 feet tall. So you could have one 60 feet wide.
They're great tree climbing trees for kids.
Yeah,
got the experience there.
Yeah, and in places that sidewalk is two sidewalks wide with a planting strip in the middle. So it's got quite a reach it needs.
So what about tree care? I mean, I'm sure that's one thing you have to look at. So it's one thing if the tree looks really good, but if there are other things associated with it that make it more difficult to manage, I'm thinking, okay, what about in the fall? The leaves. I mean, these are good sized leaves.
Yeah.
Can they? Do they come on later than maples? What about the color, all that sort of thing?
It's okay fall color, but not great. And it's kind of a yellow that turns to brown. And they tend to have semi-persistent leaves through the winter, which is – some people like that and some people don't like it. It can be a little bit of a maintenance headache because unlike ginkgo, where ginkgo turns yellow and on the day that the leaves all decide they're going to fall off, they fall off, you know, in about 24 hours, meaning you can clean up the leaves at that point. The London Plain's not that way. And actually, this oak, the leaves I brought in, is another example. A lot of oaks have persistent leaves in the winter. They're not evergreen, but the leaf doesn't come off and hangs on in this brown form. But actually, on that oak that I pulled these off of, it's a chinkapin oak. It's a little bit attractive, you know, in the winter. It holds snow, and that can be attractive. But that's a consideration for sure. And they are large leaves. It does get a fruit. London Plains do.
Can you separate the male female and just plant males?
No, I got to think about that.
I mean, like you would do that with ginkgo, for instance, because you don't want the smelly fruit. But
yeah, that genus Platanus, which is the sycamores in the London Plains, I think is monoecious, meaning you get both sexes on the same plant, meaning you can't select a male, you know, and that is something people might not realize, that when you have a species that is fruitless, sometimes it's because it's odd genetics that there's been crosses made, and when the cross is made, it's infertile and doesn't form fruit. But in many cases with trees and shrubs, it's because there are separate males and females, and a male was selected. That's become a little controversial recently, the heavy selection of male trees in towns and cities by people who are advocates for or personally have problems with allergies, because, of course, the males are producing the pollen. If you grew nothing but females, you'd have no pollen, from those trees. There's always going to be plenty of trees around that have pollen, though. I mean, trees that have perfect flowers with male and female in the same flower, like a apple and cherry, of course, are producing pollen. But most of that pollen's spread by insects, not by the wind, so it's not as much of a problem for people.
I was just reading the other day, there was a couple of communities in New Mexico that have a pollen policy, and certain trees they will allow to be planted, and other ones they won't.
Yeah, it tends to be the wind-pollinated species.
Like conifers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Conifers could be a problem for some people. And then
or junipers.
Think about species you see that flower early. Those tend to be the ones that are wind-pollinated. And I'm not a entomologist. Maybe ask Diane next time she's on. But I assume there's less pollinators out early in the season, and so that'd be when you'd get your big influx of wind-distributed pollen. And then once the hummingbirds and the bees and all those insects are available, then you've got more species that rely on insect pollinators and bird pollinators instead of the wind. And the wind ones are the ones that give us the problems.
So I've never really gone up to one of these London planes and smelled the flowers, but
it's a tiny inconspicuous flower.
But they produce a rather large...
Yeah, it's probably an inch diameter, a kind of a bristly ball that, if allowed to, will disintegrate. And there's probably more than 1,000, maybe about 1,000 seeds.
Do they tend to germinate as well as maples?
No. And it could be a function of the fact that it's a hybrid. So two species crossed with one another, they may be infertile for that reason. I've never seen weed sycamores or weed London planes. Presumably American sycamore does do natural regeneration where it's native, but I haven't seen London planes.
So as far as replacing the trees then, are they just going to every year select a certain number of the maples to take out and then replant?
Yeah, and there's been a building project or two where they could piggyback on that to get some trees put in. And then they're also trying to, I suppose it'd be more on the north side, trying to plant in such a way that you can keep some of the existing trees and let the new tree get up in height a ways, and then you're not losing so much of the feel of the canopy. And people can do that in their yards too. I had a green ash that I only sprayed it for borers once myself. I did. And I did not like the process at all. Spraying above my head, I don't like. And it was just hard to keep it from drifting, and I'm kind of sensitive to my neighbors. And
yeah,
so I decided I wasn't going to spray for borers, and that gets lilac borer in it. Terrible, that species. So I was going to take it out, and I wanted to put in a common hackberry. And I planted the hackberry about 6 feet away, which is a little close. And I also took a pie-shaped, about a third of the crown of the canopy of the green ash out. And so the hackberry had no canopy above it, so it could grow fairly freely. And then one day I just went in and topped out the green ash and felled the trunk, and I had a tree well established, probably 6 inches in diameter, before I took the green ash out. It's a little tricky. You need, if you use an arborist, you'd want somebody who's willing to, knows that you're trying to save something, and it can be dangerous to do that kind of work yourself.
What about and going back to the campus again? I've not planted any myself, but I've been really curious to, if I had some more space to put one in. One of the Rocky Mountain maples, just because of the color, when I go hiking over in the Mendon foothills in the fall, is just absolutely gorgeous.
Right. And the one you mean is what I called canyon or big tooth maple
uh-huh.
earlier. There is a species commonly called Rocky Mountain maple that is not that.
Oh, okay.
And that is,
and so it's
not
a big tooth that I'm thinking of.
Yeah. It turns orange in the fall. Some scientists think that there's a connection with Acer saccharum, the sugar maple in the eastern U.S. It comes out to about probably all the way across Missouri, and then you don't find it anymore. And it may be that the mountains raised up and just separated sugar maple into two different populations that eventually became different species. But Rocky Mountain maple is Acer glabrum, and it's a shrubby maple. Turns kind of an insipid yellow in the fall, and it's worth growing, but it's just as a little item of interest, but it's not a big tree that you'd have. And the big tooth maple just doesn't get big. I mean, there's a few examples, but for the most part, it's somewhat shrubby and small.
It's usually less than about 20 feet, isn't it?
Yeah, and not very available in the nursery world. There is a grower, J. Frank Schmitz, which is a wholesaler that sells to nurseries here in the state and elsewhere, that grows one cultivar of big tooth maple. And
is it a hybrid? I mean, or
no.
Okay.
It is grafted.
It is grafted,
yeah.
Though. What's it grafted on, too?
That's the problem. It's grafted. I always forget. It's either grafted onto sugar maple or
well, that's not going to help.
Red maple, rootstock. And, yeah, the problem is with maples, we tend to get chlorosis here on our high pH soils. Presumably, Grande Dentatum is used to the high pH because it does grow right down to the edge of the valley where the pH would start coming down or going up. And so it would be nice if they would grow it on its own roots or get a Acer Grande Dentatum rootstock going that they knew they could produce with. But nurseries need simplicity and things that work rock solid. And so they were willing to have a cultivar available of that species. I think it's called Rocky Mountain Glow. But they weren't willing to do the work it would take to figure out what rootstock to grow it on that would be more appropriate.
So I guess I'm stuck. Unless I know a landowner over in Mendon that I can go talk to find out if I can dig up a sapling and bring it over.
I do find nurseries sometimes in Utah that have them, and I suspect that they're digging – well, either growing them maybe from seed or digging them maybe with permission on somebody's property and selling them that way. And that may be a better choice. One other problem – one problem then with the cultivar, the Rocky Mountain Glow, is the color isn't reliably good. And but it is more a tree form with an upright stem, and that's nice.
Well, we've reached the halfway point of the program already. Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Gardening Show on Utah Public Radio. And Mike Coons, USU Forestry Extension Forestry Specialist, is my guest for the rest of the hour. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment, our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. Or you can email us your question at upraccess@gmail.com. We're going to take a small break and be back again with Mike Coons, so stay tuned.
Extend your enjoyment of potted and forced tulips, daffodils, and hyacinths. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Keep these potted plants in a cool, bright location to extend their bloom time. Once the plants are done blooming, cut off the faded flowers and move the container to a sunny window. Keep watering thoroughly whenever the top few inches of soil are slightly moist. Pour off any excess water that collects in the saucer to prevent root rot. This is also a good time to replenish their energy with a dilute solution of any flowering houseplant fertilizer. Once the leaves turn yellow and die, or the soil warms and the danger frost has passed outside, you can plant the bulbs in the garden. Tulips and hyacinths perform best in sunny areas with well-drained soils. Daffodils will grow in sun or shade in a variety of soil types. Plant the bulbs 2 to 3 times their height deep and water thoroughly. It may be 2 years before you have flowers, but what a great way to get more bloom for your bucks. Visit our website for this and other gardening tips.
Support for Utah Public Radio comes from listeners and from USU's Anthropology Museum in Old Main. It's free Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturdays 10 to 4. This Saturday is Spring Fest, a celebration of spring traditions from around the world. Information is at anthromuseum.usu.edu.
Hello, welcome back to the second part of the gardening program here on Utah Public Radio. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we're still looking for a title for the show. So if you would like to weigh in with your opinion, go to Utah Public Radio's Facebook page or go to our website, upr.org, and you'll see a link where you can see some of the titles that we're exploring, and we'd like to have your opinion. Also, within the program, I'm looking for a little bit of help. We talked earlier about a Wait, Wait, Don't Plant That segment, but I'd also like to explore having a segment that I think I'm going to call Take a Hike, and we could talk with different folks around the state about hiking trails, biking trails, also for cross-country skiing, and what's the flora and fauna that you would see along the way. So if you have any suggestions for someone who really knows hiking trails and the plants that are along those trails, I'd like to know that. And then if you have any interest in doing some kind of an opinion or commentary or reading that's related to plants and gardening, I would like to hear from you as well. So just go to our website, and when you're clicking on your opinion for the name of the program, you could fill in your comments and send me your suggestions. Eventually, also gardening tips, listener gardening tips. What do you do at your home for gardening that might be helpful for someone else? So anyway, we'd like to make this a little more of an inclusive program, and your comments and suggestions are appreciated. I am going to have a gardening calendar segment, and we'll start that off right now. Wasatch Community Gardens in Salt Lake City is hosting a workshop. It's called Extend Your Harvest, a Cool Season Tour and Hoop House Project. It's a two-part workshop, Saturday, March 9th and the 16th from 10 to 1 p.m. 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's at the University of Utah Annex. Students will carpool to the gardens. Pre-registration is required at wasatchgardens.org. You'll see how gardeners extend the growing season with hoop houses, cold frames, and other methods. The second week, they'll meet at a garden and help construct a hoop house and cold frame and other garden extenders. Red Butte Gardens is having the Art of Pruning. It's Saturdays, March 9th to the 23rd from 10 a.m. to noon. And I know that there is a cost for that one. I believe it's $67 for Red Butte Garden members and $74 for the public. And then Red Butte is also doing a 2 6-week classes on residential landscape design. Tuesdays, March 12th through April the 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. And then their second section is Wednesdays, March 13th through April 17th from 6 to 9 p.m. In Smithfield, the Smithfield City Tree Committee is presenting a fruit tree workshop that's Saturday, March 9th. So this Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon at 420 North, 385 West. For information, call 760-9088. That's 760-9088. And then, Waking Up the Landscape, USU Iron County Extension and the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District has a workshop on pruning. USU Extension experts will show you the art and science of proper pruning practices. You'll be pruning shade trees and shrubs and cleaning up perennials and ornamental grasses for the spring. And the cost is $3, and it's free for master gardeners, but all participants must register. And if you have any questions, you can call the Iron County Extension Office at 586-8132. Well, and I think locally, there must be a pruning demonstration going on, but I couldn't find any information. Do you know of anything going on?
Well, you mentioned the one in Smithfield on fruit trees, but there's also one I'm doing on March 23rd, a Saturday, in Smithfield from 9 to 11, and that's just ornamental tree pruning and a little bit of tree biology, how trees work, and maybe some tree identification. And then the week before that, I'm doing the same workshop pretty much in Wellsville at Wellsville Dam Park from 9 to 11. That's March 16th.
And do you have to register for either of
these? I don't think so. I think you just show up.
So on the 16th in Wellsville from 9 until when? 9 to 11?
11 at Wellsville Dam Park.
And the 23rd in Smithfield?
I think meeting at actually that one – I'm not sure, so maybe I can get you.
Is this through Extension?
Well, it's me, and I work for Extension. So, but it's the city that actually organized it. There is a person's – there is a phone number. Should I?
Sure.
Okay, so it's 435-232-6825, and they could tell you where to go.
Okay.
For that one. And then in Tooele this Saturday, I'm doing a talk from 1 to 2, I think it is, on tree selection and selecting better trees. That's part of a garden expo, a spring expo that they have, I think, mainly for master gardeners. But the extension office there would know.
And I do know that this weekend in, I think it's Sandy, somewhere in the Salt Lake area, there's the Home and Garden Show.
Yeah, right.
That's going on.
At the South Town Expo Center,
yes,
or something
like
that.
That's the one. And then there's one in Logan. It's the end of the month. I don't remember exactly what the date is, but I know it will be at the Eccles Ice Arena.
Oh.
Is where they're going to have that. So, and mm-hmm. that's a couple of days as well. Well, while we're on the topic of pruning, let's head that direction. I know for my fruit trees, even though I've still got a foot of snow in the garden, I want to go out and prune my fruit trees. But now's usually a good time to prune your landscaping trees.
Yeah. The mid to end of winter is a great time. Up here, at least, the problem with pruning in winter mainly is just not wanting to get out there in the
yeah.
cold. And also, just for your own safety, if there's a lot of snow in the tree, you know, think twice about, especially if you're going to crawl up into that tree at all. It's a good time for the tree because healing will start immediately as soon as the tree starts to grow in the spring. You get a wound wood or callus forming at the edges of a pruning wound you make, and that's how the tree covers that up and seals it inside. So you want that to start right away.
And some trees do that better than others.
Yeah, and the main thing is where you make the cut. That'll determine whether you get good callus formation. If you see on an old pruning wound you made that maybe the wound doesn't stick out from the trunk, like you cut the branch really flush to the trunk, and if you see two arcs of callus or wound wood forming on the edges, on the sides but of the wound, but none at the top and none at the bottom, then you cut off too much. And if you leave a stub and you start getting the stub, you know, it dies and just is sitting there, and you get callus forming at the base of it, that you left too much on. As with many things, less is better. So cutting off less is better because you can always go back and cut that stub off when the tree shows you where you should have made the cut by starting to grow callus there.
No, I've got an ash that I'll bet is 60, 70 years old. I mean, we live in a home that was built in 1917,
mm-hmm.
and it provides us great shade. But I've, on the west side of the tree, you can tell where 30, 40 years ago, somebody cut too close to the trunk,
mm-hmm.
and now it's hollowed out a little bit on that west side. And the tree is eventually growing over that hole, but at one time I could stick my fist yeah. into that hole. I can't fit it in there now.
Yeah, and it's good the tree's doing that, but when you make that flesh cut, you've not only interfered with how the tissues are put together where the trunk meets the branch, because water and minerals have to go up the branch and out the branch to get to the leaves out there, but they also need to go around that branch to go to branches higher up. And if you cut too flush, you're cutting into this swollen base that most branches have that's the mixture of those tissues. And so you're cutting – you're interfering with the movement of material up the tree. Because you're taking the branch off, you don't care about the water that's going out there, but you don't want to interfere with the trunk and farther up. So look for any swollen base to the branch and cut outside that swollen base. Leave the swollen base.
It may even just be a little ripple.
Right, yeah. And often you get what's called a branch bark ridge that goes up along the trunk, through the crotch of the branch, and down the other side again on the trunk.
And aspens are great at being able to tell where that is.
Yeah, right. Yeah, oftentimes it'll be black and real rough. And then sometimes you'll get wrinkles on the underside of the base of the branch, and you leave all that on the tree and remove the rest. You're leaving the core of the branch in the tree, but you can't get at that anyway. The core of the branch is what you see when you cut to get by a 2x4 and there's a knot, a tight knot. That's a branch that grew with the trunk of the tree and eventually, well, was cut up.
So you're cutting just outside of both of those things. So
the branch bark ridge
and the
branch
collar.
Right. And if you Google pruning USU, we've got a fact sheet that people can look at that has the simple it doesn't go too much into what branch to cut off, but it goes into if you've determined you're going to cut a branch off, how do you cut it? So you don't flush cut, and then the other thing you don't do is leave a stub. But as I said, if you leave a stub and it dies, well, you can just cut it off a couple of years later. And if you come upon a dead stub on your tree, you don't even remember why, you know, it happened, just go ahead and cut it off. But don't cut into the live callus that will be forming around the base, and it'll be swollen. The stub may not even have bark on it anymore. Usually you'll be able to tell where the live part is, and don't cut into the live part.
I know on maples you can tell where there has been a branch in the past as that's closing over, and you might only have a little hole left or nothing at all, but it does look like – not like it's been oozing. I'm trying to – it's almost it kind of rolls. There's as it grows over, and it may take a couple of years to completely close over.
Yeah, but a flush cut, say a 3-inch diameter branch, you flush cut it and you may be making an 8-inch diameter cut. If you cut it out beyond the branch collar, you'll be making a 3 or 4 inch diameter cut, and so it's going to heal a lot quicker. And typically, if you've done it right, you're going to get a donut, a ring of wound wood forming around that cut that you've made, and then it'll close it over. The wound is still inside the tree, but the tree then puts new wood beyond there, and pretty soon, even though you may see a bump there, you've got continuous wood, and it kind of forms a pipe. Even if you end up with decay inside the tree, you have a pipe, a cylinder of good wood, and pipes are very strong. You know, you don't have to have a solid tree. You can have some decay inside the tree and still have strength.
Now, we have only about 10 minutes left in the program. If you'd like to get in a question or comment, our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. You can also email us your question, upraccess@gmail.com. Mike Coons, USU Extension Forestry Specialist, is my guest and department head.
Oh, yeah.
Which department are you department head for?
It's the Wildland Resources. Wildland's one word. And it's funny. That was a name we looked into and weren't finding around the country. And now I'm starting to see it here and there. It was an institute at Berkeley, I think. There was something with wildland in the name. But in our department, it's forestry, wildlife, and range. We think of it as kind of terrestrial stuff as opposed to aquatic organisms. And we have a watershed department, watershed sciences. And then we have a people department, which is the environment and society in the Quinney College of Natural Resources.
Well, and I have to say thanks to the Quinney Foundation for helping to fund the college, because it was looking like maybe the whole college was going to get cut a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the gems of Utah State to have that college.
Thank you.
So I have a question regarding getting back to pruning just a little bit. How do you decide how far up the trunk to prune? Because usually in a landscape around your home, You don't have branches growing all the way to the ground. So I've got two European beeches that I'm going to have to do that eventually, and I'm just never sure. Do I just wait until the tree's a little bit older, or is it better to do it when it's young?
Yeah. It's called crown raising, and most trees don't have canopies all the way to the ground, crowns all the way to the ground, because they're growing in forests with shade from other trees all around them. So the lower branches get shaded, they die, eventually they fall off. And you can try to simulate that. But if you have a tree that is growing in open sun and the branches will go all the way to the ground if you let them, it's okay to let that happen. I guess what I'm saying is it's totally an aesthetic decision. It's not at all a decision for the biology of the tree. You may not have a beech that looks like a beech in a forest if you don't raise the crown, but you may have a very interesting tree anyway. I've got a cut-leaf tricolor beech, and beeches are very shade tolerant, and I've planted it under the crown of a large Austrian pine, about a 20-inch diameter Austrian pine. And I ran out of places to plant trees in my yard a long time ago. And so now I'm putting trees under trees, and I've got a beech growing under that pine. And it's just kind of going out laterally and putting branches, weaving them through the branches of the pine. And it's kind of cool and a nice fall color. And I'm not pruning that up the way I might if it was in the open. If you're going to raise the crown because you want to be able to walk under the tree, or it's over a sidewalk or a driveway, then try to make your cuts before the branch gets very big. So don't be in too much a hurry, because when the tree's really young and you just got it from the nursery, those branches are providing food for the rest of the tree and for the root system especially. But try to cut before you're making cuts bigger than about an inch in diameter. So, you know, don't let your branches get 3 inches in diameter and then cut them off. If you're planning on cutting that branch off, take it before it gets much
because
over
it's more
an inch.
Stressful the larger the branch.
Yeah,
get.
It just takes energy to close over that wound, and in the meantime, it's open to decay fungi, and so better to do it a little earlier. But the year you buy the tree and put it in the ground, I wouldn't do any pruning.
Okay. Well, we have our first caller. We have Stu in Green River. Hi, Stu. How can we help?
Good morning. I started some apricots from apricot trees from pits, and I have 25 of them in a north-south alignment on the west side of my property. And so far, I really haven't done any pruning, and they're about 15 to 20 years old. Now, I know the climate's not conducive to a crop of apricots, so I'm really not concerned about producing fruit, and it's a very pretty windbreak in the fall. Okay, my question is there some minimal pruning that I should do, or otherwise I'll regret it in the future?
Yeah, so you want this as something of a windbreak, right?
Yes, that's more or less why I planted it, and I thought, well, if I get any fruit, that's just a secondary benefit. In the time it's been in, I've only had one crop, and that was around 2010.
Given that fruit isn't your interest in these trees, what you wouldn't want to do is raise the crown much, because, well, or if you do, you need to plant something that will give you low coverage, like a large shrub. And then I suspect these trees are a little bit shrubby, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, so you would ruin the windbreak effect if you raise the crown, because you'll actually speed the wind up as it goes underneath in that gap underneath. Then you'd have to plant some shrubs to fill in that gap. So I would just remove dead branches and branches that maybe are strongly interfering with one another, maybe two branches growing right along the same path.
It
leaves the stronger one. And but otherwise, I would not really touch them much. There's no biological reason to, and you're sounds like you're accomplishing what you want, and anything you do is going to maybe interfere with your accomplishment.
Yes, and as far as the shrubbiness goes, one of the, wait a minute, I think I said 25, I meant 15, sorry. Mm-hmm. One of them got a borer in it, several years ago, and I dug the borer out, but that particular tree has got several trunks, so to speak.
That's okay. If you want it to go back to one trunk, you can do that. When you have several trunks on a tree, this works with evergreens or broadleaf trees, you can, and you want to go to one trunk and you've lost that central leader, pull two or three leaders together that are going sideways near the top, pull them together, tape them with masking tape, a few turns of masking tape to keep them together, and then snip the top out of all of them except one. Try to pick the strongest one and leave it. And the bud will come out on that new one and grow up. The others will hold it vertical. And then by the time the masking tape is rotted away, that one likely will be vertical. If either of the other two or three you left start to take over and compete with it, just snip the top off of them again.
Okay, okay.
Great.
Yeah, and that's all right. I don't need to go to a single truck.
No.
Each one of the trees has got its own personality.
Yeah,
so
sure.
To speak.
It sounds
and I
nice.
Always look at that one and remember the boar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, well thank
you
Stu. Very much.
And we have another caller, but we have a very short amount of time. I'm sorry, I missed the name.
It's Chelsea.
Oh, hi, Chelsea. And where are you calling from?
Logan.
Great. Go ahead with your question. We have about a minute left.
Yeah, I just wondered what the best time is to plant a tree
soon,
in the yard.
Soon, although in Cache Valley, who knows?
Who knows when it's soon will be.
But Arbor Day is a good is when Arbor Day is, which is in the spring because it's a good time for planting trees. You like to buy trees without leaves on them. If they're not evergreens, and put them in the spring as early as you can dig the hole and frankly, as early as the nurseries start getting them in up here.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. And then a quick email question. I have a dwarf peach tree that we planted 3 years ago. We pruned the tree last year and plan to prune it again. I'm concerned about pruning the tree early in the spring and then coming back later when the tree is blooming to look for sucker branches. Is there a possibility of pruning too much? In 20 seconds.
Yeah, there's possibility of pruning too much. I assume they want fruit production. And
so no more than 25% of the tree each year?
Yeah. Sometimes you see up to a third for young trees.
Okay. Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Gardening Show on Utah Public Radio. Mike Coons, USU Extension Forestry Specialist, has been my guest. Thank you for joining us.
The Gardening Show is produced by Shalane Smith Needham and Brian Earle. To listen to past programs or get additional information about the show, just go to upr.org. The Gardening Show is a production of Utah Public Radio. You're listening to KUSR HD1 Logan, KUSK HD1 Vernal, KUSL HD1 Richfield, KUST HD1 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.